This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Here's the song that we'd like to do for all the younger set of people, the teenagers and what have you. This one's called Vacation Zope.
Vacation's over.
It's over. It's over.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and welcome back to another 8 weeks of your favorite podcast. Just like in first grade, today we're talking about sharing. Specifically, though, we welcome the guy who's going to teach us about all things ride sharing, Mr. Uber and Lyft expert himself. Please help us welcome Harry Campbell. Plus, in headlines, we'll talk about the sharing or gig economy. Do people working in the gig economy pay more attention to their money? We'll ask senior financial planner at T. Rowe Price, Stuart Ritter. And that's not all, of course. We'll share the Haven Lifeline with a lucky listener. Also, Joe and OG will split comments about a letter from a listener, and I'll even let you sample some of my very own homemade trivia. And now, two guys who will someday learn that sharing is caring. Joe and OJ.
Mom says it all the time, and I still don't understand what she's talking about.
I don't understand anything anybody talks about.
Generally, first piece of cake in my mouth is caring. That is totally caring. Hey, everybody, welcome to another 8 weeks of the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe Salcihi, and across the table from me,
the one and only, those are the words you're looking for, the super awesome, can't do it without you. So glad you're here.
Backbone
Thank
of the
you
show.
For renewing another 8 weeks.
Yeah, we had a tough time signing him for another 8 weeks.
Yeah.
A contract. We tried to sell him for a player to be named later, but that didn't
work.
Didn't go over. Apparently Cleveland didn't take that one. They take every other horrible thing, but not that one. That's horrible. We got a great show today, OG. We got Harry Campbell here talking about the sharing economy. Ever think about driving for Uber or Lyft in your spare time?
To say I didn't think about it once is not true, but that was a fleeting moment.
Well, you've got a young family. Cheryl always makes fun of me because I generally just chat away with it because I'm very interested in the wide range of people that drive Uber. And I just think, right. Man, hey, you got a couple extra hours and you got this, you know, I got my trip to Germany coming up. Why not make a few bucks for spending money, you know, instead of taking it out of the budget? Harry's going to talk about how that works. And the cool thing is, I was reading his book, prepping for the interview. It's easier than you think, which is awesome too. So even if you think that you're not somebody that can, you know what else is easier than you think? Planning for college. It actually is not easy. It's a pain in the butt, but we can make it easy for you because we've got a new partner on this year's show, College Backer, OG. Big thanks to College Backer for supporting Stacking Benjamins. Here's what you do. Sign up at collegebacker.com/SB and you get a $10 match when you start a college fund for your own family or send a gift to kick off somebody else's college fund. How cool is that? Get the college fund rolling at College Backer.
Free money. I like that.
Yes. And thanks also to Harry's for supporting Stacking Benjamins. Love my Harry's razor, OG. Harry stands behind the quality of their blades, but they know switching razors isn't an easy decision. So they created a trial offer for you. Claim yours by going to harrys.com/SB. I even just upgraded to the Winston myself.
Ooh.
Yeah, a little heavier, a little nicer. Good stuff.
You missed a spot today.
We got Harry Campbell here. Let's get the party started.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamins headlines.
Our first headline comes to us from CNBC. Say hello to the number one threat to your $11 million inheritance. And I was surprised, by the way. Say hello to your number one threat to your $11 million inheritance. And I thought the number one thing was going to be mom didn't save $11 million.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, too. Like the number one threat to my $11 million inheritance is the fact that my mom is about 10.99999 million short.
It's just a bummer. But that didn't make the article. But this is a pretty
clickbaity.
Well, yeah, but as you know, this is a pretty important piece written by Darla Mercado at CNBC. It says the biggest obstacle stand between you and that windfall from your rich grandpa isn't the possible 40% estate tax. Bam! It's your pesky relatives. A recent poll by TD Wealth showed that 44% of attorneys, trust officers, and accountants cited family conflicts as the biggest threat to estate planning. TD Wealth surveyed 109 estate planning professionals in January at the 52nd annual Heckerling Institute on Estate Planning in Orlando, Florida. I bet that was exciting. The 52nd annual Heckerling Institute on Estate Planning. Boy, those guys get crazy at that thing, I'm sure.
All the after parties.
Yeah, I heard they were kind of dead. It turns out modern families create more estate planning complications. Quote, we see more blended families, multiple ex-spouses, kids from prior marriages, and situations where one spouse is much younger than the other, said Ray Radigan, head of private trust at TD Wealth. These fact patterns can pose problems. Most people expect to inherit over $100,000, but actually receive less than $100,000. This was one thing that people expect.
I expect $11 million. I will get $11.
Right. People are shocked that grandma didn't save the money she thought. By the way, when I was a financial planner, I saw that all the time. People thought that their relative was rich. They found out that the relative passed away and the inheritance wasn't anywhere near what they thought it was going to be.
Oh. Or they didn't get it.
Good point.
Their nephew instead.
Second, lack of communication. 69% haven't been told how much money to expect, leading to potential confusion. But don't you think, isn't there kind of a, I don't want to get all English lit nerdy, but isn't this like a King Lear situation? You tell people how much money they're going to get, and all of a sudden people start kissing up to you for different reasons. And it just, you know, gets ugly.
I think that the whole concept of estate planning begins kind of in that close family unit, right? Where from the time that your kids are young, you should be talking to them about money and behavior about money and saving and that sort of thing. And that will continue to expand as they get older and they have kids. You got to take ownership for your own situation. But I think it really is important to let your family in on the secret, right? Because you're doing them a disservice if you do happen to have, you know, like $5 million laying around, or that's your plan, or $11 million, like the article says, you're doing them a disservice if they don't know that. If they think it's going to be 100,000 and it turns out to be $1 million, that's a big problem. And it sounds like a good problem, but there's always different problems, right, with money.
That's,
and it goes the other way just as much too.
Yeah, that's not the problem I usually see, though. The problem I see is that the money, okay, the money's the money. The big problem I see is stupid arguments about mom's favorite chair and who's going to get that chair, right? Like the money be damned doesn't mean anything. That chair will go to court over, we'll fight over, we'll have nastiness over. I think having the right person in charge of your estate, somebody that's going to follow your your rules. So either the trustee, they're called the contingent trustee in this case, because you're the main trustee of your trust, and this person steps in if you're the person, if you pass away, right? So they're kind of the heir to the throne of taking over, making stuff happen. Or
the business decisions.
Yeah. Or if you have a will, it's called the executor of your will. So executor, contingent trustee, one of those two people. But I think they got to be seen. They got to be somebody who's okay with being seen as a jerk and somebody who follows directions. Because the best thing you can do for an estate is just go into that document, look at every single thing that has to happen, get it done quick so people can't fight about it. Or if they do fight about it, it just mutes it really quickly. Just get it done.
I've seen estate planning documents where if the person who writes it says, if there's an argument, you get nothing.
Wow.
You know, which I think can help. But added to that, you know, behavior that you're describing about the successor trustee or the executor of the will, I think you also have to have great wisdom with that, right? Because it kind of reminds me of the whole like Solomon cut the baby in half story, right? Where it's like, using your mom's chairs example, I want the chair. You know what? Fine. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to sell the chair in an auction, and then we're just going to split the money. And then whoever says fine, you go, okay, that's, you know, you're the one who wants the chair most. You know what I mean? You know, you got to have a little bit of, and you got to be political, right? You got to be able to kind of navigate through those things. But communication is really what this all boils down to. There's nothing good in having surprises for your heirs, whether it's a good surprise, hey, I left you $20 million, or it's a bad surprise, like, hey, I left you a whole bunch of property tax bills and and Citibank bill to deal with. I think it's important to kind of just be okay with the fact that, especially as you get older, right? Especially as you get older, you got to let other people in.
Down at the bottom of this piece, I think it's a great takeaway. Quote, there are two events that might trigger a review of your estate plan, new tax legislation, and I think this is the much bigger one, a change in your family situation, a birth, a death, a marriage, or a divorce. It's always a good time to look at your estate plan if you haven't looked at it recently.
Absolutely. That and beneficiaries. How many times have you seen beneficiaries that still have the ex-spouse listed as the 401k beneficiary?
Whoops. Hey, OG, coming down to the basement. Harry Campbell, if you've ever thought about taking part in the sharing economy, Harry's your guy. Of course, he's the founder, editor, and director of the big website, therideshareguy.com. It's become the industry's leading resource for drivers. And between the blog, the podcast, YouTube tutorial, they reach hundreds of thousands of people per month. And of course, they're a voice for drivers. Campbell's been featured in a lot of different places, the New York Times, Forbes, CNET, Wired, Los Angeles Times, Huffington Post. He lives in Los Angeles. And guess what? Right now, he's in Texarkana on his way to the basement. Let's say hello to Harry Campbell. And coming down to the basement, Harry Campbell. Man, have a seat. How are you?
Well, I'm standing, but I'm ready to do this.
I know. It's weird having you lord over me here. What's this all about?
I'm trying out a new format here where I'm going to stand over your shoulder and see all the questions where you're going to ask me so that I can have better answers, basically.
That is so great. You know, you're one of the first people I think of, Harry, when I think about the sharing economy. But initially, you weren't that guy. Like, you say in your new book that you weren't excited about. I mean, you were pretty nervous when you gave your first ride. But before we even get to that, let's talk about your first ride in an Uber or in a Lyft. Tell me, did the light bulb come on? Did you go, oh, this is something I should be doing?
No light bulb came on whatsoever. I think I was probably using it on a Friday night. Actually, my first ride was with Lyft, and a friend down in San Diego told me about the service, and so we rode it together. I'm sure we were going to partake in some drinking, probably a conservative amount, one
no,
or two drinks.
No, come on.
At the most.
No way.
Yeah, that's a joke. I'm not very funny. But, you know, so that was really my first experience, though, with Lyft. And I mean, this was before people really knew about Uber and Lyft, right? It was kind of, if you had one cool friend, maybe they were the ones telling you about, hey, there's this new service, Uber or Lyft. I wasn't that guy telling people. But on that first ride, I mean, I actually remember, I think my driver's name was David, And the reason why I remember is because he had this cool theme in his lift that was Hawaiian theme. So he was wearing a Hawaiian shirt and he had a little hula dancer bobble doll on his dash. And it was just kind of a cool experience. And I definitely, a light bulb didn't go off that I should start driving for them, but it definitely made me want to take the service more as a passenger.
That's funny. You got like the whole Disneyfied impression of Lyft.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think that was one of the big selling points for Lyft, especially in the early days, that they were big on sort of those friend, you know, your friend driving you around in a car. And so you did come across themed cars and people that did karaoke in their car. And some of that has gone away, or a lot of that has gone away these days, and people are a little bit more about the driving. But I think that novelty aspect was pretty cool when these services were first getting started.
So when did you first decide to start driving?
So I first started driving about 4 years ago, and the reason why I picked it up was actually because my wife was in med school, which meant that I had a lot of free time on my hands, and I was working full-time as an engineer for Boeing, but I just kind of, it seemed like an interesting opportunity to make a little extra money on the side. And to be frank, what got me off the couch and got me signed up was one of my drivers told me that since Lyft had just launched, at this time I moved up north a little, so I was now in Orange County near Los Angeles. And one of my drivers told me that since Lyft was so new, he was getting paid $24 an hour just to sit there, regardless of whether he did rides or not. And I think when I heard that, I was like, wait, I can work and not have to work and make money? All right, I'll sign up.
I can be lazy and make cash at the same time.
I mean, this guy literally told me he was watching Netflix at his house. He wasn't even in his car waiting for rides. He was at his house. And then, you know, once in a while, he would get a ride request and go do it. Now, obviously, the services are a lot busier today, but it was kind of cool when they were first starting. And, you know, there's a lot of money going around with these companies, especially when they're first starting and trying to grow.
So how did your first ride go then when you became a driver? Did you, I can see you out there with the shop vac, like cleaning the car out, being all nervous.
I was definitely nervous for my first ride. And actually, I think I skipped out work a little bit early and I decided on my way home, since it wasn't quite rush hour yet, I said, hey, maybe I should try and see if I can get a Lyft ride on my way home. And so I turned the app on and definitely had those kind of nervous feelings like, hey, I'm about to have a stranger in my car. I mean, I know how to drive myself around, but I've never been paid to drive someone else around. And so I was definitely I wasn't hesitant, but I was definitely just sort of kind of curious what was going to happen. And I got a young man who was near a college and he was just needed a ride home. It was about a $7 ride. I got paid $7. He left me a $2 tip, I believe. And then I was done. I had enough for the day. You know, I kind of wanted to just dip my toe in the water. So, I mean, it was a cool first trip. And then that weekend, I think I ended up going out and doing a bunch more trips. But that first ride, I literally did one ride and then stopped, which ended up being one of the cool aspects of the job, is just how flexible it is. You can work as little or as much as you want.
Well, the first thing on my mind, we'll talk about flexibility in a second, but let's talk about how much money you can make, because you detail this in your book, The Rideshare Guy. How much cash can you make, Harry?
That's the number one question that people always ask me. So you are a good interviewer. Basically, we surveyed drivers, over 1,100 drivers, and they reported making about $17 per hour before expenses. And there's a little variability there. I mean, if you're driving in a big city like LA or San Francisco, where it's really busy and you're always getting requests, then you're probably going to be a little bit higher. I typically try to make around $15 to $25 an hour whenever I go out and drive. And that's pretty feasible here in Los Angeles. So there's variability based on what city you're in and, you know, the times you drive. But that's a good ballpark for how much you make.
When are the best times? I guess that would be like rush hour or concerts letting out or bars letting out.
Yeah, Chapter 5, we talk all about it. And my slogan is follow the alcohol, right? And typically when people are drinking or they want to go drinking or they've been drinking, anything involving alcohol, really, holidays, July 4th, St. Patty's Day, you know, you can find a lot of rides and also surge pricing or prime time, what they call it on Lyft, which is basically, you know, when demand goes up on the rider's side, they actually pay drivers more. And so you can make more money for doing the same amount of work, which is obviously enticing. So Friday, Saturday nights, and you know, any time where people are out and about drinking, but those aren't the only times that are great to drive.
Do you get notices about those ahead of time, or do you just have to pay attention to the app and what is paying at that current time?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's definitely a learning curve. I mean, one of the other things we've seen with surveying drivers is that the drivers who are in that 0 to 500 trip, so basically newbies, are actually making $5 an hour less than drivers with 5,000 trips or more. Because the more you do it, you start to realize, okay, Friday, Saturday nights, that's obvious. But you start to realize, oh, there's certain times or certain places or certain venues. You might think that going to a sports, you know, here we have the Los Angeles Dodgers. You might think that going there for a pickup is going to be great, but you sort of have to know the time. times and the places where you want to pick up riders. Because if you're sitting in traffic for 45 minutes trying to get out of the stadium, you're not going to make a whole lot of money there. So there's definitely a little bit of a learning curve there. And Uber and Lyft do send you some information, but it's pretty generic. It'll be, you know, there's a Dodgers game this week, or there's a Yankees game this week, you know, sort of just that general stuff. I think for the more savvy drivers, they start to, you know, look to sites like mine or forums or Facebook groups and really interact with other drivers. That's typically, you know, that community, that's where you're going to get the best info.
Is it hard to get approved to be a driver?
You know what? I have another saying here. Basically, if you can pass an online background check and you have a pulse, you can probably get approved to drive for Uber and Lyft, which can be a good thing when you're first getting started. Because, you know, one of the things we hear from drivers, especially a lot of the older drivers who may be retired or may have been forced into retirement and may need a little bit on top of Social Security, or sometimes I have drivers tell me their wives just want them out of the house and they're going to look to sign up. And the nice thing is that Uber and Lyft don't discriminate on age, sex, race, anything like that. They will hire anyone and everyone, which is great when you're first getting started and signed up. Obviously, down the road, that means that there's more competition because these drivers are technically competing against each other for rides. I don't always look at it that way, but you know, there's some of the positives and negatives of that.
But what about the condition of your car? I never see an Uber driver or Lyft driver with a, you know, with a late model bondoed up vehicle that with, you know, rusted out door handles.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that, so you technically can in, you know, the city, the requirements are a little different in every city, but for the most part in the bigger cities, for example, you can drive for Uber with a 2002 or newer. When you think about that, a 2002 car, I mean, that's what, 16, 17, 18, right? I can't even do the math. It's so old, right? We're on a personal finance podcast. I'll let you do the math, but that's an old beater car. Like, you probably don't want to ride in that car yet. We've found that the average age of drivers' cars is closer to 2011, 2012. So most drivers are actually using newer cars, even though they could technically use older cars. And I think a lot of the reason has to do with, believe it or not, as a driver, you put a lot of miles on your vehicle. A full-time driver might easily do 1,000 miles a week on their car. And so, you know, those newer cars obviously are going to get better gas mileage, and they're going to just kind of have that better general upkeep. I mean, an older car just may not last that long.
Speaking of math, I'm sure you've done the math, though, on car depreciation, on, you know, the cost that you have. I love at the end of the book, by the way, your Ride Share Guy book, that you talk about running this as a business, which I think is very important part of any hustle, whether side hustle or your main gig or whatever. But how does that math work out? I mean, if I'm averaging $20 an hour as a driver, how much of that should I look at is probably going to go back out toward expenses?
Yeah, so the easy way is, I've already done all the calculations for you, and it's going to be about $3 to $5 per hour in expenses. And you can imagine, if you're driving a Toyota Prius and you got a great deal and paid all cash and didn't, you know, kind of went that route, right, you're going to be closer to the $3. If you're driving a car that doesn't get as good gas mileage, you didn't get as good of a deal on it, you'll be closer to the $5 per hour. So, you know, I typically subtract $3 to $5 per hour from the gross expenses. So if you're making $20 an hour, you'll be in that $15 to $17 an hour range. So it's not a ton, but it's definitely something that you need to think of. And, you know, we've got lots of resources available on the site if you're kind of a numbers guy. I'm an engineer by trade, so there's a lot of spreadsheets that we've created on the site that kind of help you figure out, you know, your earnings, but you can also look at your earnings per mile and your cost per mile. But it definitely, you know, I like, a lot of drivers get into this looking to make a few hundred bucks a week, and you can definitely do that. But at the same time, since you're an independent contractor, you will need to file a Schedule C, which is pretty easy. I go through it all in my book, but you will need to think about those expenses and some of the other just general liability issues that might come up, which is why I think it's great practice for running a business.
You talk about flexibility quite a bit. How easy is it, Harry? I have the app, and once I'm approved as a driver, and I just then flick it to, I'm imagining I just flick it on and then I flick it off.
Yeah, definitely. No, we've got a great YouTube video that sort of walks through how the Uber driver app works. And I think it's one of our most popular videos with hundreds of thousands of views. So if you want to sign up for Uber later, I'll send you that. And I'll make sure to send you my referral code too.
Deal. Yeah, because, and you make this point, you might as well give a referral to somebody, right?
If right. I mean,
you for teaching them, or somebody's, you know, the last person that you drove with, or whoever it might be.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the cool things. So I'll tell you a little secret. Uber lost $4 billion last year, and a lot of that are the subsidies that they're offering to drivers and even riders too. You know, I call this right now the golden era of rideshare. Passengers are getting a great deal. And I mean, when I signed up to drive for Uber, I got a $500 bonus. I was an engineer all my life, and I never got a signing bonus as an engineer. right?
But you did with Uber.
But I did with Uber, which is pretty ironic, right? Obviously, the hourly pay was a little lower than I was making as an engineer. But, you know, the flexibility side is what's cool. Because let's say you're looking at this and you say, okay, maybe I can make $15 an hour in my market. That's not a ton for me. But one of the nice things about Uber is that once you sign up, you're approved. Uber's never going to kick you off. If 3 months down the road, you want to go out for a night on the town or you want to save a little extra money for your vacation, you can go drive. And let's say you make $50, maybe not vacation, maybe a night on the town.
Yeah, right.
It'd have to be a pretty cheap vacation for $50. But let's say you want to make $50. I can't think of another job where you can not do it for 3 or 6 months or longer. Go out, drive a night, make $50. And Uber has a feature and Lyft has a feature called Instant Pay that allows you to cash that money out instantly to your debit card. So you can literally have money in your bank account as soon as your shift is over, even if it's only $50. So that kind of flexibility is pretty unmatched.
Yeah, day before your vacation for expenses or, you know, spending money on your vacation.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when I'm feeling a little guilty about, you know, because I'm a big personal finance guy too, right? So sometimes when I'm feeling a little guilty about the lunch I have, or, you know, sometimes here in LA, it's an expensive city. So if I have a $20 lunch or something like that, I sometimes flip my Uber app on the way home and they have a destination feature. So I can only get rides headed back to my house and I might make $5 or $10 on my way home, but it's kind of a cool, quick way to offset some gas and the cost of my expensive lunch.
Can you turn down rides? Like you talked about, you got done with your work at home, so you can look for somebody who's kind of going in your direction anyway. Can you kind of do that or not?
Yeah. So, I mean, Uber has a specific feature that allows you to only get rides headed in your direction, but you don't actually know typically where exactly where the passenger is headed until you arrive at the pickup point. So you don't kind of discriminate against certain people or, you know, locations, whatever it might be. But for the most part, you know, one of the nice things about being an independent contractor, the good and the bad, right? You have to run your own business is, you know, sometimes the bad, but the good is that you can work for multiple services. So you can do Uber and Lyft. You can also ignore certain rides if you want. Now, you can imagine Uber doesn't like when you ignore a bunch of rides in a row, but they actually won't and can't fire you for ignoring rides. So if you see I get a ride request from Joe and he has a 4.5 star passenger rating, I say, oh, I don't want to pick this guy up.
That's exactly what I was going to ask, because there was recently a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode that I saw where Larry got a terrible rating from a driver and then nobody wanted to pick him up. And one guy said, when he picked him up, he said, well, I'm risking my rating by picking you up. You can say, no, I'm not going to pick up that person.
Yeah, no, that episode was pretty funny. So, I mean, most drivers will take, you know, they'll take any ride, they'll take any passenger. They're not as strict. But, you know, during times where it's busy, if a passenger has usually a 4.6, 4.7 is pretty good for a passenger. But anything below that, I mean, there's probably a reason why they got a low rating. I mean, maybe they're always drunk and causing havoc, or they're always keeping the drivers waiting. And it's usually not a huge deal. But if it's real busy, I'll skip on that type of passenger and look for someone else with a higher rating who might be more courteous, more respectful.
Or like in that episode that your Romanian sister is ugly, I think was the was the thing. I don't remember.
I think that's what it was.
I've got another question. You say follow the alcohol. I think, you know, sure, you get paid a lot at 2 o'clock in the morning, Harry, but is there some risk? I mean, have you had some horror story that you can tell us about that might make you think twice about maybe not doing the 2 a.m. shift?
So short answer is yes, I've been puked on.
Have you really?
And the long answer is that, you know, this is another one that kind of comes with time. And, you know, anyone who I think has worked in the service industry or, you know, really worked at a bar or anything like that kind of understands there's certain people that, you know, you can kind of spot the warning signs. And I talk about this a little bit in my book, is that you really kind of have to be the captain of your own ship. You're the boss of this car. And, you know, for example, there's warning signs. If someone drops their pin and they're 3 blocks away at 2 a.m. and they're not in where they are supposed to be, you know, that might be a ride that you want to cancel because they're probably beyond, you know, intoxicated. Let some other driver deal with them and get puked on. If they're kind of stumbling up to the car, you know, it's kind of up to you, your discretion. And, you know, I keep barf bags in the car just in case. So there's definitely some precautions you can take. I have one of the writers on my team actually wrote a pretty interesting article where he called it Embrace the Pukers. And so he basically loves people who puke, because what he does is he keeps cleaning supplies in the back. And as soon as someone pukes, you know, I wouldn't say he encourages it with his bad driving, but it's definitely happened to him a lot. And when someone pukes, he actually takes all the pictures, sends it into Uber, and you can get up to $150 cleaning fee. And so he does all the cleaning really quickly himself with his supplies. And then he flips over to Lyft and does Lyft the rest of the night and, you know, gets the cleaning fee. And I think he made over $1,000 last year in cleaning fees.
That's incredible. It just reminds me of when I was at the Citadel, some people in Navy and Air Force, they would go out in the ROTC programs. They go up with pilots. And we always heard stories that the pilot's goal was to get the cadet to puke, right? Was just the goal. And his goal as the driver is to get the passenger to puke. I don't want to go in that guy's car.
That's, yeah, I think most drivers don't want pukers, but this guy's a little different.
I would say that. What about other, you know, the sharing economy is big. We've got things like Airbnb. But when it comes to driving, any other services that you work for besides Uber and Lyft that you'd like?
Yeah, no, I've tried it all, to be honest. I mean, I think the other big category is going to be food and package delivery. So these are some cool options because, you know, if you're, I think one of the things we hear from drivers is that sometimes, you know, the novelty of driving people around for money can get old after a little while, right? So if you want to even take a break or even intermix some package delivery, some food delivery in with your rideshare driving, there's definitely those options. Postmates, DoorDash, Amazon Flex is a big one, delivering Amazon Prime packages. You may have noticed if you order a lot of Amazon Prime like I do, sometimes random people come up to your door and drop off packages and, you know, they're not UPS and they don't have a uniform on and you're wondering who the heck they are. Those are just everyday people like you and I that, you know, in some cities, I believe that it's $18 an hour that they get paid.
Wow.
And, you know, it's kind of similarly, you know, flexible blocks. So it's pretty cool. There's definitely quite a few other, you know, what I would call kind of sharing economy aspects that you can work in. A lot of them, you know, these are all logistics businesses, though. It's getting something, whether it's a person, a burrito, or a package from A to B, though. So you encounter a lot of the same challenges and opportunities.
We even had somebody on the show recently from Roadie, where they do cross country.
Yeah.
Like if you're going across country, take somebody's lamp with you. I mean, it's pretty cool stuff. The book is The Rideshare Guide, Everything You Need to Know About Driving for Uber, Lyft, and Other Ridesharing Companies. The funny thing is you and I just spent just over 15 minutes together and we like scratched the surface. But man, if you're going to do this stuff, this is a fantastic guide on how to, everything from how to become a five-star driver, how to maximize my profits, how to run it like a business, difficult passengers like we talked about earlier, getting started, everything that you need to know. Where can they get the book, Harry?
The book is available everywhere. It should be, you know, the easiest place is probably Amazon.com, but it should also be in sort of your local Barnes and Noble, Amazon bookstore. I think those are the only two remaining bookstores, actually. One of my readers emailed me the other
day. Books a Million. We got a Books a Million in Texarkana.
There you go. One of my readers emailed me the other day and he said that he has it on loan at the public. He has it on hold at the public library. So
right.
I know there's some libraries who have bought it. So if you want to go the cheap route, you can also read it without even having to pay for it.
And of course, the site is therideshareguy.com and you guys have quite a community of people that are in that business there.
Yeah, definitely. No, we have hundreds of thousands of drivers coming to our blog, podcast, YouTube channel. We've got a video training course and now obviously the book. I definitely feel like the book, I'm a little biased, but I feel like the book is the best value. Our training course is a lot more expensive and I think the book is a lot better content and a lot cheaper. So I'm going to recommend that. And, you know, even though I'm actually probably costing myself money by saying that, but, you know, I'm not often, you know, I feel like something that I created, you know, I was very, not satisfied, but I just feel like very proud of all the work that I put into that book because it really is a combination of, you know, 4 to 5 years of experience of driving for Uber and Lyft, all these other services. And I probably talked to tens of thousands of drivers during that period. So really answering all the top questions they might ever have.
If you're walking the dog or out on the morning run or on your way to or from work or wherever and don't have a pen handy, you know what? We have the link at our show notes page at stackybenjamins.com. Harry, thanks a lot for hanging out with us for a few minutes, man.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, trivia fans. All I can say is, wow! Harry Campbell just made me realize that at my core, I'm a money-making machine. I'm not letting just anybody in my sleek, hot El Camino, though, so I'll have to think some more on what exactly I'll share. Huh. Well, I'll ponder that later. Let's get you some trivia, huh? What did ride-sharing service Lyft use as their company logo in the early days of the firm? I'll be back to share. I'll share the answer with you right after the break.
Thanks Thanks to College Backer for supporting our podcast. Boy, it would have been nice, OG, had you gone to a real school. You could have used College Backer for your education.
I went to a real school first, then an unreal school second, and then finished at a middle of the road rural school. I don't know.
A different school? Well, regardless, yeah. College Backer will help you with a bunch of those. It's the easiest way to save for college with help from family and friends. Check out College Backer if you want to help your kids avoid these huge student loans people are coming out of college with.
It's crazy. $38,000 on average now.
Yeah. $38,000 and a stiff drink. It's like, you're going to need this.
No, that's the average student loan
I know
that people graduate with right now.
I'm saying it should come with its own stiff drink.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yes.
I think so. No, it comes with something even better, a 6% interest rate and a $100 a month payment for 32 years. What a bargain.
Kick in the butt till you're 82, right? Yep. College.
But don't worry, if you don't pay, we'll take your Social Security check when you're 65.
Yeah, hey, you don't need that Social Security. Sally Mae needs it worse than you.
So start saving now.
Well, College Backer will help you do that. They help you find a great 529 plan. Those are college savings plans around the nation with tax-free growth and tax-free withdrawals. College Backer will give you a simple custom link like collegebacker.com/Luke for you to share. And that makes it easy for family and friends to help you with your kids saving for college. So let's say, OG, we want collegebacker.com/OG's kid.
Yeah.
Family kids, and friends.
Plural.
Yes.
Podcast listeners. Sorry for us.
That's what we should. That's what we should do. I can't do that now because mine are already done. We should have like.
That's okay. Anyone that wanted to donate to Joe's kids can use the College Backer link to donate to OG's kids.
Tears instead. Yeah, makeups. Yeah, I don't know that I like that. But anyway, you can use a link like that. That makes it easy for friends and family to help you. And kids grow up faster than you think. I can't believe my kids are almost 23 now. Holy cow. Imagine turning some of these holiday and birthday toys into college savings. Sign up at collegebacker.com/SB and get a $10 match when you select start saving today for college for your child or select give the gift of college savings to kick off somebody else's college fund. collegebacker.com/SB to sign up and begin a new college fund. We're also brought to you by Harry's. I love my Harry's razor. Let me tell you a story about Harry's razors. Somebody that works with Cheryl got a promotion and we went out for dinner with them. And Cheryl and this woman work together. I don't see her husband that often, but we're sitting there. We're having a conversation about, you know, nothing like you do with people that you don't see that often. And all of a sudden out of nowhere, this guy, DJ, he's talking about his head and shaves his head. He's like, man, I love my Harry's razor. And Cheryl starts laughing. She starts cracking up. She's like, are you kidding me? Did Joe pay you to say that? He's like, no, why? It's like, Joe loves Harry's razors. They're like sponsors of their Stacky Benjamin show. He talks about them all the time. I especially like my new heavier Winston blade. And I also like the shaving cream's phenomenal. The shaving.
That's what smells so good from over here.
Ah, it's so amazing.
So buttery smooth, your face today.
So if you want to be better with your money, listen to this, OG. Harry's can save you about $100 a year if you're a frequent shaver. Take better physical care of yourself. Harry's products have won countless grooming awards, and they'll keep you looking great and feeling great. Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price, which is why over 3 million guys have switched over to Harry's. Harry's stripped out all those unnecessary features like vibrating handles, heating blades, 15 lubricating strips, and the unnecessary cost to deliver customers one perfect razor at an amazing price. A good shave comes down to good blades. Because Harry's owns the factory, they're able to deliver quality blades for just $2 a blade instead of like $4 or more that you're going to pay at the drugstore. All products backed by 100% quality guarantee. So here's the offer. Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades, they'll give you their trial shave set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/SB. All you got to do is pay for shipping. So claim your free trial offer from Harry's today. It's a $13 value for free when you sign up. Here's what includes. That trial set is a weighted, ergonomically correct razor handle, 5, count them, 5 precision engineer blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shaving gel. You're going to love that. A travel blade cover. And to get your free trial offer, it's harrys.com/SB. Right now, that's harrys.com/SB.
Hey,
Hey there, money nerds. Welcome back to the trivia sharing segment of this Sharing is Caring podcast episode. My brilliant mind has conceived a few amazing ideas for me to participate in the sharing economy without having gross people in my car. Check these out. Why buy toothbrushes for the rest of your life when you could just share mine? Same goes for deodorant. $15 a month and never buy personal hygiene products again. Those were the bread and butter options, but here's the piece de resistance. I'll share my lunch with you. Of course, it's my lunch, so I'm going to eat first, but I usually stop after the sandwich, so that gives you lots of options. Most of the fries, about half of Joe's mom's pasta salad, and a free soda cup are all yours if you order now. Can you say cha-ching? Well, how about I also share today's trivia answer, huh? Before the break, I asked you this question. What was the original Lyft logo? And the answer? A pink mustache. In the early days of the company, Lyft would have their drivers put a big pink fuzzy mustache on the front of their cars to make them stand out. Kind of makes you wonder why I stopped at Fuzzy Dice for the El Camino, huh? See ya.
Nailed it. Nice job, dude.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Do you like Lyft better or Uber better?
I like Lyft better. Huh. I definitely...
Never done Lyft. I've done Uber.
I like two things about them. Number one is that just all the corporate culture news around Uber.
Well, there's that.
Yeah, not good. But more than that, I like the ability to tip my driver.
You can do that on Uber now.
Yeah. Well,
in fact, now, since they put it in, it's like more annoying. Because when he gets done, instead of rating him, it's like, hey, so you rated him 5 stars. How about you give him some money? And I'm like, come on. That was not the deal we signed up for.
Yeah. Lyft has always been that way. And it's pretty, I don't know. I just like it. So whenever possible, I use Lyft. Hey, let's use the Haven Lifeline and throw this out to somebody, OG. We can help them tackle one of life's, or rather life insurance's, most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they're disrupting the life insurance industry by focusing on those two things that you value most.
Tipping my Uber driver and inheriting $11 million, obviously.
What could go wrong there? Actually, it's your family and your time, but those are two good ones. It's why they created a simple way to buy affordable and dependable term life insurance online. Head to stackybenjamins.com/Haven Life now to get a free estimate for coverage and learn about life insurance the modern way. By the way, in our basement Facebook group, we haven't seen you there lately, bud. What's going on there?
Yeah, I know. I've been focusing on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I gotta schedule it.
Yeah.
Prioritize.
Lots of fun going on in the basement. But somebody was asking about how much life insurance to buy. And I said,
as much as you can afford.
I said, no, that's what insurance people say. What I like
as much as you can afford.
I like the Haven Life calculator because it gives you a range based on your needs. People were throwing out rules of thumb. I don't like a rule of thumb. Why use a rule of thumb when you got these simple calculators that will help you figure out a much, much better number? And today we're not going to use a rule of thumb for Adam. Well, maybe. Let's see what Adam's question is. Say hi, Adam.
Hello, OG and Joe. This might be a long question. My wife wants to buy a house near where we currently live. We're currently living in Shanghai, China, and the real estate has been going up pretty quickly around here. She wants to buy a house before the real estate goes up too much. However, we're about to move to Beijing because I have a job in Beijing. She thinks we can move back to Shanghai later. So I wonder what you think of this idea and how I should go about researching the Chinese real estate market, whether it will keep going up or go down. The down payment for the house that she's thinking about would be about $100,000. This would take all of our savings that we currently have. Okay, thank you for your perspective.
Wow, $100,000. Adam, all the way from China. Can you believe we've people listening to us in Shanghai and in Beijing? I know we have listeners in Hong Kong. We have listeners in Singapore. We have, where's our friend Marisol at? Albania? Mm-hmm. Niranjan in India. These are just people. It's a gentleman's name in Estonia. It's great hearing from our friends around the world. But
Adam asks about real estate prices and should he buy the house now, OG?
I would never in a million years do this. I mean, firstly, I don't think you or I have any perspective of the housing market in China.
Zero.
Nor do I think we have any idea of where to find resources for housing market prognostication in China. So I guess take that with a grain of salt. But why would you want to buy a home and then go move and not live in it? I mean, presumably you can rent it. That's maybe the unsaid thing that you would do. But man, it sounds like it'll kill you financially. You're going to use all your cash and then you got to move across the country, I suppose. I don't even know the distance between Shanghai and Beijing. Probably it's like 10 million miles or something, I'm sure. So it's the moving truck's going to cost a lot. And then you've got this home that's in an area that you don't live and with no guarantees that you'll actually ever move back. So no, no.
Yeah, just in general, to your point, we don't know anything about China, but we do know basic financial planning tenets. And even though you want to make a good planning decision with real estate, you don't want to think of it as an investment. And if you're taking all of your money and sinking it into something that's not an investment, right? This is something that's good, you're going to be emotional about. I'm not a fan of that in general. The other thing is that when you make a real estate decision, it should be especially one involving $100,000 because real estate transaction costs are high. I think it needs to be a long-term decision. So you need to ask yourself, is this a place where I think I'm going to be for at least 10, preferably 15 or more years? And if the answer is you're not going to be there for another 3 months, I'm also not sure that that's a great thing. You know, there's a bigger question here because if she's saying that the house, if his spouse is saying the house is an investment and you have this $100,000, I think, OG, the real question is, I have $100,000 I need to invest. Where's the best place to invest it? That's the unasked question. I mean, if they're looking at it as an investment, because if she's saying housing prices are going up, so I want to jump on this investment before they go up more. Well, what you're really saying is I want to get in on an investment. And certainly if that $100,000 is a 10 to 15 year time frame, there are plenty of places that historically have gone up very nicely, 10 to 15 years.
And to your point, it very well may be real estate, but probably not all real estate. So if you're thinking about it from an investment standpoint, the thing that I would add there would be now you're talking about a very, very finite allocation of your investment into one very, very, very narrow investment, which is one single property in one single town, in one single province, in one single country. You know, if you were looking at it from an investment standpoint, wouldn't you want to have portions of all sorts of different properties and all sorts of different towns or all sorts of different company ownership or whatever the case may be? This is a very bad idea. That being said, I don't know. We don't know anything about real estate pricing in Shanghai or Beijing. But at the end of the day, if you were talking to somebody or if I was talking to somebody who was saying, I think Austin's going crazy in housing, but I'm going to move to Shreveport next week. What do you think? Should I buy a house in Austin? I'd still say the same thing. No. why do you want to own a house? And then you got to deal with the whole like rental property stuff from across town. And I know people do that successfully, but yikes.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Andy. We also get letters down here in the basement, and we have one today from our new friend Lamar. Lamar says, I saw an internet today from, I'll just leave the name of the bank blank, from blank bank. I took a screenshot, but I don't have a way to send it to you. It stated the following: education refinance loan. You could save an average of $271 per month, asterisk, and go out to eat. Pictured with a beautiful plate of food and a get my rate button to select. Of course, they don't want you to pay it off sooner with the savings, so you might as well go spend it on something else. Even Doug isn't that easily fooled, or is he? Wow, just imagine how much coleslaw $271 could buy. Yum. Why are people picking on me with coleslaw? Just,
I don't know.
Yeah, I could get really sick on $271 worth of coleslaw.
As long as it's 8 to 10 hours old.
I really, and by the way, this loan that this particular bank is offering, I've looked into this loan before, and I think for somebody else, and I think it's actually a good deal. I don't like this type of advertising either, though, OG. Take the money that you save and spend it on stuff that you don't need and probably doesn't increase your standard of living much.
Yeah, your utility at all.
pretty frustrating to see that sort of stuff. But it's almost like those same commercials we're starting to see now, which I think are really funny because I remember this back in the American Express days, as I'm sure you do. The whole, like, you deserve it advertisements. My favorite one is the one from Northwestern Mutual. I don't know if you've seen that one yet, where the dad's out there mowing the grass and he's all sweaty and the daughter says, "Dad, take me over to Jessica's." And she's like this whiny, you know, precocious 13-year-old. And he's just kind of sighs because he's got this whole lawn to mow and it's hot and he's, you know, and then he decides, "Dang it, I'm bringing Jessica to our house." So he builds a pool. And so he's got the cool house. And the message within the message is, "You've earned it, dang it. Now you got to live your life now," right? Which is just a sign of how the economy is and how people view the economy. So this is just that kind of advertising as well. If you're still in debt with student loans, your main objective is to get out of debt. And if somebody is going to offer you a better interest rate, you have to capitalize that savings and re-put that on the debt so that it actually works.
Pay it down quicker.
If you just refinance, like how many times do you see people go, "Oh, I just refinanced my house. I was at 4%, but now I'm at 3.8. You go, "Great. What'd you do with the $80 difference? What's that? What $80 difference?
But I'm paying less. You know,
and I was at 22 years left on my mortgage, but now I'm at 30 again. And somehow this saved me money." You're like, "Huh? I'm not sure that you understand how that works."
It's magic and it's sad and it's the way that industry works, to Lamar's point. Thanks for the question, Lamar. If you've got a question for the show, Lamar didn't have a question. Lamar had a statement, had a contribution. If you have a contribution to the show, you have a statement, you have a question,
keep it to yourself. Send it. I mean,
StackyBenjamins.com and you'll see questions for the show. Click on that link and guess what? We'll talk about it or answer it on the show. Thanks also to everybody who's left reviews. And I feel bad because Mom puts these things on the fridge and I forget where we were at. And I am way behind. This review, I hope I haven't talked about this one before. This was on Mom's fridge a little while ago. 5 stars, about as awkward as eating spaghetti. Have we talked about this one?
No, but I like spaghetti.
"I don't learn anything and the jokes they tell really don't go over well at the dinner table. My wife doesn't know what I'm talking about, and all my friends think I'm crazy. I keep listening anyway because I have nothing better to do on my hour commute to work. Thanks for filling up the dead space in my morning. Hopefully you guys will talk more about Bitcoin, and I can really be financially independent in 2018. Somebody knows how to pour salt.
That's our new tagline, Stacking Benjamins, when you have nothing better to do.
When all your other options are done.
You know,
Stacking
Benjamins. Fill your dead space with our voices.
Hey, if your life is becoming a dead space because your financial plan is not where it needs to be, OG's taking clients. Probably not the best transition, is it?
Than your normal ones.
If your life's a dead space, head to, you know, it would make me happy in my dead space of a life working with OG.
Have somebody with me.
Head to StackyBenjamins.com/letter O, letter G, and you'll get on his calendar and you and he can talk privately about making that dead space blossom. All right, coming up on Wednesday, we're talking to the people from this little place called Fair Isaac. The FICO people are going to be talking to us on Dad Shortwave. Pretty excited about that. We're taking your letters and lots of excitement. We got kind of a potpourri of a lot of financial topics and, of course, the regular stuff, wondering what Doug's up to. We'll see you guys next time. Go stack some Benjamins.
So what should we have learned today? First, need a few extra bucks? Take a cue from Harry Campbell and maybe drive a few miles with passengers during your off hours. You could pay off that loan quicker or maybe even save a few extra bucks. Second, thinking about your legacy? Put your estate plan in writing so the kids aren't fighting over your favorite chair that's still got holes in it. But the big lesson? Don't offer your underwear up for sharing. That's just gross. Toothbrush? Yeah. Deodorant? Of course. Meals? No brainer. Those are fine to share, but underwear? Pump the brakes on that one, folks. Special thanks to Harry Campbell for stopping by. You'll find his book, The Rideshare Guide, everything you need to know about driving for Uber, Lyft, and other ride-sharing companies, wherever you buy books. This show was created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. Shannon Cowan is our community manager and social media guru. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I do not like computer jokes, not one bit. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor.
So for those of you new, welcome to the after show. This is the part of the show we don't talk about. We also generally don't talk about financial planning anymore. So if you're here for finance, what are you doing here in the first place?
You weren't here in the first place, correctly.
Yes. But we talk about other stuff. And I've got an interesting story. So I don't know if you remember, a year and a half ago, I went to the Podcast Movement Conference in Chicago. And took part while I was there in Jason Vitug's Road to Financial Wellness event, met several people who listened to the show. It was also where I first met Rich from Paychecks and Balances, but we met quite a few people, Michelle, who introduced us to Blueprint, and a few other nice people. But while we were there, if you remember, Cheryl's purse was robbed. Somebody reached in her purse and took her wallet.
Yes, I remember you telling me that.
So we had to deal with all that. And then a few hours later, I get a call from my heating and cooling guy who was working outside my house and says, Joe, your door's been kicked in. So we ended up having our house robbed. So we had both televisions gone, my work computer gone, our Xbox gone. That was the worst part. Right. Cheryl's jewelry, most of which, of course, and this is the thing it's frustrating about jewelry. It has no value to anybody except her, right? It is fairly worthless stuff at a pawn shop, yet has lots of sentimental value. Gone. Just completely gone. So while I'm on Michigan Avenue, we run up to the Apple store because I have this idea, right? Which is, I think my Find a Phone will help me. And the guy verifies it. He goes, yeah, if these crooks are stupid enough to turn on your computer, the second they turn it on and it's hooked up to the internet,
boom.
You'll know exactly where it is. So I watch that every day. Watch it all the time. Nothing happens. Fast forward.
This was a couple of years ago.
It's a year and a half ago. Yeah. Right. Almost 2 years ago now because it was in August. So fast forward now to a year and 9 months later. And I turn on my Find a Phone because I can't find my stupid laptop.
Because you can't find your phone.
Yeah. Well, I can't find my laptop. So, and it turns
out new one that you bought after the other one was stolen.
Yeah. Just, I've given up on that stuff, and it shows all of my Apple devices, my iPad, my new work computer, my phone and my laptop are all here. And my computer that was stolen a year and a half ago is 6 miles south of my house in a not very good neighborhood. It just appears again. So
you went and kicked in a door. I like where this is headed.
Well, Richie and I were having a meeting the next morning, and he's like, let's go kick in the door. I'm like, calm down, man. So
we're not U.S. Marshals. Right?
So can you see Richie and I? Hey.
Yeah. He's got like a big vest on that like weighs more than him because he's like, he's a little guy, right? So he's got like, got the big Kevlar helmet that like is too big. It's like over his eyes.
We're sweating our brains out. We can't see anything. we go down to the police station and we report it. And I have to explain to them what Find My Phone is, which isn't a good sign.
Isn't that so awesome?
But the cool thing is, on his day off, the detective calls me, surprisingly, about 3 hours later. And
That's nice.
Yeah. And he and I talk about it, and I explain the Find My Phone thing. And he said, well, I know this is going to be frustrating to hear because you see it on your screen, you know, generally where it is, but I can't go down and just walk through everybody's house. We have these laws. I can't just go walk through people's house because Joe has a little thing on his phone saying that there's a computer in there. He goes, and even though you say it's reliable, it's not reliable enough for me to convince a judge that it's a search warrant. Judge isn't going to get it. Judge is not going to let me just go into a house.
Sounds like you need to put some money in the judge's reelection campaign.
That's exactly what we did. No, we...
I've seen House of Cards. I know how this works.
I know this whole thing. I don't live in a huge house. I can tell
what room it's
in. I know it is. And I'm telling him, I'm like, this thing, I said, he goes, well, do you have an address for me? I go, no, but I can get one. He goes, how can you get one? I go, if I drive down that street, unless it's an apartment building with one on top of another, I can tell you which one it is. If the houses are pretty close together, maybe, maybe not. But I think I can tell you which house it is. And he said, well, I don't want you knocking on their door. I'm like, I'm not going to knock on any doors. I'm just going to drive by slowly with my head down, but doing a little MacGyver work here, you know, pretending I'm
part of the CIA doing a black op mission.
Right. Magnum PI work or something.
There you go.
So, after my lunch on Friday, I drive down there and I'm all excited. I am super geeked and I turn the thing on. I turn onto the street and luckily the houses are fairly far apart and there's a fairly decent car in front of this house and the house is actually pretty well taken care of given the neighborhood. And it's my computer's definitely in that house. Like there's
the kid sitting on the front steps. He's like, it says Joe's computer right on the outside of it. He's giving you the bird going, no search warrant. Good luck.
So I call him up and leave a message. He doesn't call me on Friday. He doesn't call me on Monday, even though I leave him two more messages on Monday, because I think it's going away. And he calls me Tuesday morning, says, hey, man, sorry, I ended up in this thing all day and da-da-da, whatever. He said, hey, but I'm headed down there, and I've been thinking about this. Here's what I want you to do. I can't have my phone against my ear when I go up to the house because I don't know this neighborhood. I need to protect my safety. I got to have my hands free. He said, but I'm going to put my phone on high. I'm going to put it on my waist in my little phone holster. And if you hear me say the phrase, man, it's kind of hot today, huh? Ping that thing. And I will listen inside the house to hear if I hear this. Because, you know, these Apple computers are pretty.
Bing, bing, bing,
yes, it's pretty loud.
Bing, bing.
So he said.
So you're like part of the stealth operation.
Yes.
Like this.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm in. Can I wear a black, you know, mask? And do I get a gun? Did you say that? Please tell me you said that.
Well, I just want a badge. I wanted to ask. Well, I already have a badge. I wanted to see if I could put it on my shirt, you know?
Yeah. Like stand next to him.
Yeah. Like I'm a deputy. So am I deputized for the next 20 minutes? Do you got to like say something right now where you deputize me? So the posse goes to get my thing. No. So he calls me back then. He goes, okay, I'm getting ready to go in. And he starts walking up to the door and I hear something. And then he goes, hey, are you there? And I said, yeah. He goes, they got a damn pit bull. Thing ran right up to me and there's no car in the driveway. And so he takes out some spray and he like sprays the stuff on the ground between him and the pit bull. He goes, but the pit bull just still ran by it. Luckily, pit bull didn't attack him, just kind of sniffed him. He goes up to the house. Pit bull just kind of follows him up to the house after he stops and tells me, hey, they got a pit bull, but it looks like he's okay. So, okay, we're going in now. Puts it back.
Execute. I say again, snowman. You're like, come on, we need code words, dude.
I know. So I'm just waiting for the, hot day today or whatever the heck the phrase was. And he knocks on the door, nothing. And he knocks on the door again, nothing. And then he goes, sir, are you there? Yes. He goes, Mr. Joe, nobody's coming to the door. Doesn't seem like there's anybody home. He goes, you know what? Let's do this though. I'm going to put my ear up to the door. You go ahead and ping it now. And I'm all excited. What I should have done, I should have said, nah, I don't think so. Kind of a dumb plan. there's nobody there.
They're going to know. Yeah, they're going to know when they, yeah.
So I hit the ping button. My thing says a sound is playing for roughly 6 seconds. And then I see it move on my screen, and it doesn't move far. It moves, you know, a little tiny bit on my screen, which means it probably moved about 2 or 3 feet. And my screen changes from a sound is playing to the next time it's hooked up to the internet, a sound will play. It moves. And the cop, of course, says, I didn't hear a thing. Couldn't hear anything. I go, no, it just moved. There's somebody in that house, and they were sitting right on top of it, and it pinged, and they're probably covering it with everything they can find, a blanket or something. I don't know what the deal is, but yeah. So then the cop did the, to use Doug's phrase from earlier, the piece de resistance, the big thing. He left his card.
Oh yeah, of course he did. If you have a stolen MacBook, please call me.
Yeah. You know, that MacBook that was pinging in your house. I'm not after that. Just give me a call and let's talk about last week's Roseanne episode.
Yeah. Frustrating.
I'm like, why are you leaving your card? We know these people have stolen stuff in their house. You're leaving your card to tell them that you're, and he goes, well, you know, if I get some cooperation, and he said, so this might be attacked, that if you tell them that you're not going to press charges, you just want your MacBook back, that we could kind of lean on them that way. We can say, hey, listen, if you give them the MacBook back, the people said that they're not going to press charges. And he goes, how does that sound? I said, they stole a lot of crap from me. Like they stole.
Yeah, it sounds like we'll tell them that. And then after I get my shit back, then I'm going to say, change my mind. Just like you guys changed your mind when you decided to take all my crap.
Right. No, I'm going to take everything. So anyway, let's fire it up. We'll hear one last time and then we'll end this show. Let's see if it's still there.
Can you send a message to it?
No.
Like, I know where you live.
Oh, they know I know where they live.
Yeah. I think it's time to kick in the door, dude. I'm coming over.
No, we'll have Richie kick in the door.
I got friends in low places.
All right. I'm looking. So it shows the MacBook sitting there, but I think it just shows the last location. Let me click here and see. No, it says now.
Yeah. Sounds like you call your buddy up and tell him to do another stakeout.
It's hooked up to the internet again.
Why don't you go over and knock on the door? Let's go.
I'm headed that way. This will be the last episode of the Stacky Benjamin Show.
I know. I got your back, dude. Well, you go in first. I'll be right behind you.
Yeah, right. Well, this show's over, Stackers, but you know what? It's Military Appreciation Month, and that means that we've got time still for a shout out to members of our community, members of our family who have served our country. And you know what? Today, I want to give a shout out to two of my uncles, my Uncle Henry, who is in the Army. Let's do three. My Uncle Eddie, who is in the Army, and my Uncle Bill, also in the Army. And two of them served in Vietnam. One served in Korea. And a big thanks to all three of my uncles, my dad's brothers who served like he did in the military. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just my uncles, but they want to celebrate their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. Of course, you may be eligible for Navy Federal membership, and you don't even know it because it's open to all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families. They're all eligible, and I want to reiterate, and their families. If you have family, like I do, who served in the military, well, then you're eligible for Navy Federal membership. Navy Federal's employees are part of the community they serve, and many of them are military family members, reservists, or veterans. here during Military Appreciation Month, stackers, go visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate, and you're going to see all of Navy Federal's Military Appreciation Month offers. So many cool things they're doing for veterans. You'll also see all their other awesome 24/7, 12 months of the year offers. That's NavyFederal.org/celebrate. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.